Hey, Rain here. I have an awesome guest today, Mandy. And we may be kind of all over the place because right before we started the recording, it's like, where do we start? There's been so many things that have happened over the last couple of years. Anyway, say hi, Mandy.
Hi, Mandy.
Is there a place where you would feel comfortable starting? Because how did you meet me? How did we originally get together?
Think it was a class at Vibes.
Right.
I took a friend to a twin flame class that you were teaching because I thought she would benefit from it. Turned out I did. Really.
Well, it didn't take too long after that class for you to request to sit down and do a reading, and we did a reading in the park. And a lot of people don't know that I have this really weird connection when I do readings. I just kind of go, right? And so I don't remember everything of that reading. What were the highlights that you got from that time in the park?
I don't remember a lot either, to be honest. I remember that I needed to go north.
But you were contemplating just dropping everything, your life here, and starting all over again. Going someplace that doing something and going someplace that you had always wanted to go, and it was following a dream, and you weren't sure whether you could do it because you didn't have a job, and there had been a whole lot of negative things that you had to overcome. Right?
Had I lost my job
Yeah,
by then?
you weren't working when.
Yeah, I just knew I had to get out of here. And I knew I wanted to go to Oregon because I loved it. And you kept saying I needed to go north, more like British Columbia, if I remember right. And I was kind of mad because I didn't want to go there. I wanted to go to Oregon. And and then I was going to meet, there was something there.
Something important.
Yeah, something important that I was needing to do or see or something.
Or find out. And it was north of where you originally.
Wanted to be.
Right. And I didn't say you weren't going to. I didn't say you were going to end up living there. I said you just needed to go north. So when you went north, what happened? Because you dropped everything, and you did. You took the leap of
I
faith and you
did.
went to Oregon.
Yeah, I only had a room for the first week. That's all I planned in Pacific City, and then I went. No, sorry. I went to Yahoo's first to spread ashes of my baby Chewie. And then I went to Pacific City because I had an interview in Tillamook. And that fell through. And I ended up spending a week or two there. And then I ended up in Seaside, which is way north. And I decided to stay in a hostel. I figured if I always had this feeling that I wanted to help people metaphysically, I didn't know what that meant, but I knew I had to get out of my comfort zone to do that. And I figured, what better way than stay in a dorm-style hostel? I might as well rip the band-aid off and just do it. So that's what I did. And I met a guy there that, I don't know. It's like I knew him my whole life.
Twin flame.
I think so. But it wasn't as intense right off the bat. Like, it was just like I knew him, but not, it, there wasn't intensity.
So it was more like a soul family.
I feel like it was more that, looking back. Because it was like the, like I noticed him when I got there and stuff, but it was like the next day or the next night when sitting around the fire that, you know, he showed up and was talking that I really noticed him. And the connection was there. But, so I don't think it, I really don't think it was a twin per se.
But it was definitely a relationship that, and a tie that had been formed probably most likely in another life, as in soul families, right? And
definitely a karmic thing too.
Right.
Sure.
Something needed to be learned.
Yeah. And I knew that.
Right.
I mean, I had this feeling that he was completely going to be horrible for me.
Right.
But I had to figure it out. I had to do it. I had to figure it out. Like, there just was not any way around it. And I had never, ever done that before because I don't do that. I'm not a, or I hadn't been a people person to that point. I don't just pick people up, or I don't just
have connections with people.
Yes.
Right.
Especially, like, right then, like strangers, you know. So, but I just knew I had to.
And that's, you know, that's the interesting thing about relationships that we are meant to learn from. Because typically, we will know that this is going to be hell, right? Mm-hmm. There's something in us that tells us this is going to be hell. But there's also something in us that tells us we need to have this experience, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and mind you, I am not telling anybody out there, oh, ignore red flags. But what I'm saying is stay aware, because all the relationships that we have in life are here to teach us, right? If we pay attention. And
absolutely.
And we do not have to spend years or decades with someone who has red flags. And in this case, you went through it and it resolved itself. And I don't want to necessarily say resolved itself, because it was a very difficult experience, right?
From day one.
And,
but it was also,
you needed
extremely beautiful too.
Right. What part do you feel comfortable sharing?
You can share all of it.
Okay. So I know that you guys were not intimate right away.
No.
And you're a very sexual being. And so, you're not the kind of person that if you're interested in somebody, you would necessarily put that off, because you enjoy that. And there is nothing wrong with enjoying sex, right?
Right.
You just have to be sensible about those kinds of things.
Right.
And I know that was a weird thing to say. And if you hear it crying in the background, it's because the dog is in the cage, because the dog will not leave Mandy alone. So he's sad that we're talking and he's not right in the middle of it. And the cat is sitting here, and so it's like, how come you have the cat and you don't have me? I'm surrounded by animals. So anyway, you left the hostel and you went back down south, right?
So I was there a week, and he worked there at the hostel. And I was there a week, and every night when he was off, we would literally talk for hours and hours about everything. after a week, I got an interview in Coquille on the southern coast, so I had to leave for an interview for that, and it was about a 5-hour drive, so I went to the interview, and before I left, I got the job and accepted the job because it was close to Yahats, where I love, so that kind of sealed it for me, and came back, and he was by the fire, and I told him that I got the job and that I was taking it, and he just kind of shut down. Like, I could feel that he shut down, and he just asked if I would go on a date with him the next day, which was his day off. It was a Thursday, because I was going to be leaving on that Friday instead of staying the extra 2 weeks that I had planned to stay, so I could go stay the weekend in Yahats before I had to go to work and be an adult again. So I told him I would, and I went to bed, and we went on the date, and we walked all over and walked on the beach, and we went to a Mexican restaurant for dinner, and we're sitting there, and I just out of the blue told him that I just have this overwhelming feeling that he needs to come with me, and he said he did too and that he would. So that's what he did, and we left the next morning.
And so when you were there, it's interesting, you went through a whole bunch of permutations of feelings. This is right, this is wrong, this is right, this is wrong. And so you had very deep feelings for him, mm-hmm. but then felt that it was going to be a problem.
That was more after we left.
Right, that's what I meant when you were back down, when you were down south, when he went with you.
Yeah, then it was like, holy shit, what did I do? And then it was back to, I have to stick this out. It was a roller coaster, for sure. And he stayed in Yahats with me that first weekend, and I think 2 days there, it was like, I don't know if you should come any farther. I don't think you should. I can't fix you. I'm not.
So when you say this, I can't fix you, what was it that you saw that needed to be fixed?
I don't even know if I can explain it. It was just this overwhelming energy. Just this feeling like in me that I didn't know if I could handle it, learning what I needed to. I didn't know if I could handle going through all of the emotions and all the shit that I knew that was coming. I didn't know if I wanted to. I just kept going back and forth whole time.
I remember that.
It was awful. And I didn't know if I could do that and still stay in check and work on my own shit too.
Right.
And we were drinking all the time because that's what he did to cope with his stuff instead of work on it. And that gave me permission to escape with that as well. So
instead of working together on things, what you were doing is you were both running.
Yes, he had a bad accident. and was severely depressed, and I had originally, he had gone to Seaside to take his life and had met friends and got that job instead. So he didn't, and then he met me, and so he was just masking it with
and
booze
you were,
and pot.
Well, and also, you were supposed to be his savior, and you cannot
yes.
be anyone's savior.
Yeah.
You have to save. He needed to save himself.
And that's what he wanted from me, and I feel like I knew that, too.
Right.
And I told him I couldn't save him. I couldn't fix him.
So I have a question here. Was that a big deal for you, to be at a point in your life where you actually realized and understood that you were not responsible for him and you could not fix another person? Because before in your life, didn't you feel like that was part of your responsibility? Was fixing
that's
people?
All I did.
Was fix people.
Yeah.
Right.
I didn't even know who the hell I was, because I was too
busy working on everybody
concerned
else.
Concerned with being what everybody else said I was and fixing, helping their shit.
Right. So this particular step that you took
scared me.
But was also huge.
Yeah. But then he cried and said that he said all the right things. Like, he said he would work on it. He said he would do his own, and that he didn't want me to. And I listened.
Because that's the old pattern,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
But it didn't take very long for you to actually send him away.
Yeah, that was, the beginning of September, and I sent him back to Seaside the 17th, I think, of September, because I just couldn't do it.
And what's interesting in this period of time, a lot of people don't know that I do a lot of trauma counseling, and so it's not unusual for me to spend hours with someone on the phone. Mandy was, basically one of my clients, and we would spend hours on the phone, but we went through a period of time where I had told her that she needed to handle her shit, and I was not responding, partly because I knew where she was. And so I would, when she'd reach out, I would just give her some short,
tarot card answers.
Right. I was not really answering anything, because this was something that she needed. I knew that she needed to deal with. So this is kind of interesting to me how this happened. So anyway, he went back.
Well, we were drinking constantly.
Mm-hmm.
I started work, so I was basically functioning and would drink the second I got home, because he would be drunk already at 3:30, and I've never been good with being around a drunk person and not be drunk myself, so that's what I would do, and it wasn't horrible. I mean, we weren't fighting. He would not fight with me. I remember getting mad because he wouldn't fight. He wouldn't raise his voice. He wouldn't entertain any of that. And it used to make me angry, because
he was just floating along.
Yeah. And, mind you, I don't yell and scream either.
Right. I don't know
but,
that part of you. I've never known you to yell and scream.
I do raise my voice, and I do get angry, and I do want some interaction with that.
Right.
And he just wouldn't, other than cry, or which would also just make it worse for me. It would piss me off, really. Because I don't know. I just wanted it to be different, and knew that it wasn't going to. my kids, but I sent him away on a bus, and he made it to Newport, and which is only 2 hours away.
Uh-huh.
And he got stuck there. He couldn't figure out how to get back, change buses, or get back.
So he's basically like a child.
Yes. He was, he had, you know, a little bit of injury from his accident,
mm-hmm.
brain-wise, so, like, it wasn't like he was purposely...
Right, I had one of those.
...trying, so...
I don't mean I had a traumatic brain injury. I had a person that I yeah. helped that had a traumatic brain injury, so I get it.
And so he was stuck there, and he didn't have money yet because he had his mom wire him money all the time from his settlement because he was planning to take his life, so he never just brought it with him.
Right.
So he didn't have any money yet. And he was trying to get anybody he could from Seaside, his so-called friends that were basically crackheads, to come get him, and nobody would. His dealer said she would, but wouldn't be there till like 1 in the morning, or I don't know.
Anyway, 'cause your dealer will always help you.
Yeah. So anyway, I got off work at 5, and I just... drove and got him and brought him back, and my birthday was on the 25th, and he cooked me dinner, and it was nice, and we had a good time. And on that night, I was taking a shower, and I just had this overwhelming feeling that I needed to take him back to Seaside, and it needed to happen the next day, that Sunday.
So you were following your intuition, you were following your feelings.
Yes.
Right?
I didn't know that's what I was doing, basically.
So
I got out, I took him for a walk by the river, and we sat down, and the last time I sent him away, he cried about it and everything. This time I told him that I just feel like he needs to go back, and I lied a little bit and told him that it's just because, you know, we can't afford to have two people staying in this motel. He said he needed to go back until I found an apartment, and then he could come back, which was a lie because I knew he wasn't going to come back. And I think he knew too, because he didn't cry. He kind of knew that he needed to as well, which was, looking back now, really, it was kind of odd, because he always cried. He was always a very emotional person.
The decision had been made.
Mm-hmm. And so the next day we got up early and left and stopped at a few places and had a good day with it. And I took him back to the hostel, and they wouldn't let him, and dropped him off, and I was having lunch with a friend, and he was texting to please come get him. They wouldn't let him stay anymore. They wouldn't let him work anymore because he just up and left and whatever. And I told him no, he needed to figure his shit out, that he's not coming back with me, because that's what he wanted to do. And eventually I took him to pick up money that his mom wired to him and took him to a motel. And when I left, I was really cold. I was surprisingly cold. I just hugged him and left. I didn't look back or anything. I years left.
Which, if you look back on it and how you were throughout your whole life, is that pretty much the first time you had done that?
Yes.
Okay.
Because usually I break up mentally and physically and then regret it and want them back. Or the opposite, I keep them too long until they do, and yeah, completely unhealthy.
Right.
So, yeah.
And it may not have been conscious. You were following something that felt like this was what you need to do.
Yeah. And he only had a Wi-Fi phone, so he couldn't text normally. So we would still text and everything, and I was kind of cold that way. I was slowly moving away, and then he told me he was camping in the woods on it was a Thursday, or the following Thursday, and that his friends hooked him up with a tent and everything, and he was camping in the woods, and I had told him that I couldn't believe that that's what he was doing, and that he was just going to drink himself to death in the fucking woods, and that's all his friends could do for him was a damn tent, and that he wasn't working on his shit at all, and that I just wanted him to do better. Like, he could do better, and I wish that he could see that.
Right.
And I told him I didn't think we should talk for a while, because I just couldn't do it.
Because he wasn't your responsibility, and he needed to come to the conclusions that he needed to work on himself.
And then I didn't hear from him.
Right.
And then my son came the next day, that Friday, to bring me my stuff from here. And we were having a good time, and I still hadn't heard from him. And I didn't text him until that Saturday night. I just had a really, really bad feeling Saturday night. And then I couldn't feel him at all anymore. And so that Sunday night, I got in touch with a mutual friend in Seaside to go check on him, and she told me that they went there, her and his crackhead friends went there, and he wasn't there, but there was notes all over the tent. And then, shortly after that, I got a bunch of texts from him. And I knew that they were from him, but not sent by him. And I asked if one of his friends had sent them from his phone, and she told me yes. And I knew he was gone. And one of his texts asked me to talk to his mom, so, because she got texts too, so I called his mom and just told her he was missing and who I was, and she knew who I was because he talked about me all the time, I guess, and just told her that. And then I got a call from Mandy from here, from Vibes. And she talked to her and told her what was happening. And I knew he was gone, and she knew he was gone because he was there with her, I guess. I have a feeling, but she didn't say. But anyway, she said that if she got any feelings about it, she would let me know.
Right.
I don't don't know why she didn't tell me he was there. Because I knew and she knew, but whatever reason, that just had to happen that way. But, we got off the phone, and the next day, I got a text from his mom that the police called her and found him, and he was gone.
And he was in the woods. And he had taken his own life.
Yes.
And was it that day that I called you?
No, we talked the following Thursday. You called me the following Thursday morning. Because you said I just needed to check on you. And you didn't know what was happening, and that was the day I was leaving after work to, one, identify him, and two, get his stuff for his mom.
Right.
Because they couldn't come here.
So, he's been with you since he passed?
Mostly. Not so much anymore.
Right. But there were times where he was very much with you, especially when you were going through some really tough times, right?
And I was angry about it.
But that switched. Your energy around the whole thing changed.
Yeah, when I stopped drinking so much.
So what is the big lesson that you learned in that? Or what are the few lessons that you learned in that?
I know the reason for it was to, one, he was the first person to love me unconditionally. And I needed to know what that felt like. Because I had never had that in my life up to that point. I mean, my parents love me, and my family loves me.
But there's always...
And my friends love me.
Conditions.
But there's conditions.
Right.
I've never had that unconditional, no shit, no matter what, love. And I knew that's what that was for the first time in my life.
But recognizing that it's unconditional love, yet it was toxic.
Yes.
And that you deserve to have unconditional love that is healthy.
It's healthy, yes. And I wasn't sure what I needed to do for him. I remember when I was talking with you that I felt like I let him down because, one, of what I said to him the last time. Two, because I was so cold when the last time I saw him. And three, because he took his life, so I felt like I failed him in every way, so.
Do you still feel that way?
No.
Right. So no. How has that shifted?
I mean, and I felt all that, but at the same time, I knew he was going to do what he was going to do no matter what.
Right, and it's not your responsibility.
Yeah. I never took responsibility for him taking his life.
Mm-hmm.
I took responsibility for my toxic pattern of not saving him when I thought I could. So, I know now that I also gave him the love he needed.
Before he left.
Before he left.
To understand that. So that in his next journey, he has that to start with.
And the ironic thing is mine for him was conditional. In a way.
Was it really conditional, or had you created boundaries that you would not allow to be crossed anymore?
At the time, it felt like I was being conditional.
Right.
But no, it was boundaries but then there wasn't. Like, it was on and off boundaries, but I know that I gave him the love that he needed, and it was healthy in that respect for him.
Because often when we disengage, no matter how much we love a person, mm-hmm. or should I say, we have this really deep love for another person, and we know that we must disengage because there is something wrong. A lot of people won't disengage. They will just stay and stay and stay, and it creates a toxic stew for both people. And neither person can really get out of it unless both people have committed to work on it. Let's just say two people that were alcoholics start going into recovery, right? And they're willing to work on things together. But when you really love someone to that depth and you understand that that person is not moving forward, but you are moving forward, and there is nothing that you can do to make them move forward, right? They are stuck in place. And it rips at your soul to walk away or to tell them that you have to go. That is probably one of the most difficult things in this world to do, to walk away from someone who you adore, who you love, but you know that that's what you have to do for your growth in this lifetime, right? Mm-hmm. Does that sound pretty accurate?
Yeah, that was... I mean, I still go back sometimes.
Yeah, and
mentally and think...
Introspection.
Only I had done...
So you still have some regret and you still have some guilt, but eventually the lessons will resolve that.
Yeah. And maybe not so much guilt. Maybe I, especially when I finally got that, my apartment there in Coquille, where we spent so much time. And granted, it wasn't that much time. I mean, the entire relationship was 26 days.
Right.
But.
And I'm going to interrupt you on this. A lot of people think that it's only the long-term relationships that are 10, 20, 30 years, 40, 50, whatever, that have an effect on us. But there are certain relationships that we have instantaneous connections with, where we are really meant to learn from, that stay with us longer and probably stay with us until we die and go on to the next life, right? It doesn't matter how long, it matters the depth of the connection. So 28 days, the length of that, when you say that, people go, oh, you know, it's not a real relationship, but they don't understand that instantaneous connection and then all of the learning that comes from having something so intense happen, right?
Yeah, no, it...
It's like living a lifetime in 28 days.
Yeah, it felt like forever.
Right. Yeah, it's fascinating
when
it
was over.
So, yeah. I'm going to switch gears a little bit, because that was a tremendous amount to go through. You had decided that you were going to do something you had never done in your life. You were going to go to a place that you'd always wanted to go. You threw, you know, caution to the wind, if you would say, you decided to believe in divine intervention, that things were going to work out, because I remember you saying, you know, I'm going and I don't have a job, I don't have anything, and it's like, it'll work out. It worked out, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And you got a great job, didn't you?
Okay.
And you had a really great apartment, you traveled back and forth to this job. You went through this
whole... Well, this job was in this town.
Okay, but you went to Ashland.
This was after.
Right.
All of that, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm talking about kind of like the whole experience now, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, you took a leap of faith, and then you kept listening to that inner voice and following that to learn how to start breaking patterns. And while I won't say that you've broken all of your patterns, we'll keep learning until we die if we allow ourselves to keep growing as human beings. We allow our souls to grow. When we are not going outside of our comfort zone, we aren't learning. And if we're not learning, we're not growing. And a lot of people are very uncomfortable growing in this lifetime. I mean, he was stuck, right? Mm-hmm. And so he wasn't ready to do any growing. And a lot of people may not take their lives, but they get stuck. You've seen this, where mm-hmm. they get stuck and they do the same thing every day, day in, day out, day in, day out, day in, day out. And they never get out of that comfort zone, out of that box, out of, judging everything from this very limited viewpoint, right? And that was one of the other things that I wanted to talk about with you, because you have a very different personality in a lot of ways. You talk almost always in like the same tonality, right? Mm-hmm. And you have been misunderstood most all of your life because this is who you are. This is how you are. And for a lot of people, it's not acceptable, right?
Yeah, it's...
I want you to talk about being the frustration and being misunderstood.
Well, I get the, why are you angry all the time? Why can't you just be happy? Why are you depressed? I can't handle being around you because you're depressed all the time, or you're angry all the time, or you're negative. That's a good one too.
So you can say positive things.
You're just negative all the time.
You can say positive things, and
but it comes across as negative because I'm not
bubbly. You're not going ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
Right.
Basically. And I mean, it's not so much now, but in the beginning it was very disheartening. Like, it was very hard for me to not let it affect me because I was trying so hard to change and to work on figuring out who I was and how to be a better person for myself. So it was hard to not let those things affect me when I was trying so hard to not be that negative person that I knew I was, but to keep hearing that that's what I was being looked at as.
So even when you shifted, mm-hmm. and your inner world shifted, and you really started getting the lessons and breaking the patterns, because your personality is this personality that doesn't change with each emotion, right?
Yeah, I feel
you don't
like...
really show emotions like certain people do. People automatically assume that you don't have them.
Right. Because I feel like I more resonate with my darker side of my personality. I like the calmer, more less reactive, less emotional side of my personality. I don't feel I need to be dramatic and bubbly, or I don't know, to be
so
in
do
this
people,
world, I guess.
Do people... Here, I'm gonna change the question, because I'm gonna do a timeline here. So prior to a couple of years ago when you started this journey, mm-hmm. okay. So prior to that, did people constantly tell you that you should change your look, or you should change your attitude, or you should change this, or you should change that? And if you changed how you looked, you would be happier?
That and that people would like me more, or I would be able to keep, wouldn't have so many problems at work, or yeah, everything. Or it's all in my head.
And so what was it that you were supposed to change in order to be accepted?
Because I was severely depressed, and okay. I was severely angry, and I hated people, being around people.
But how is changing your looks going to stop that? And what did they tell you had to change?
Mostly, I got fat. Purposely got fat. I made the conscious decision to get fat. To not be attractive anymore. Several family members took it upon themselves to make that as... That I did that to... That I was doing that because I'm just a negative person, and that it wasn't on purpose, that it was something that I should change to be better liked or to be happy, or because there's certain standards to be happy in the world, and... I didn't care about anything then, let alone myself. And the only thing that's changed now is I love myself, but I still don't care.
Gotcha.
What people think.
Well, and so here's a weird question, and I know we're getting kind of like low on time, but is there anybody in your life that you really, really feel is at a place where you respect them so much that you would care what they think?
My mom is probably one of them that I've always wanted that super loving relationship with, and it's been the one that has always been a struggle for us. I didn't think that I cared so much right. What she thought. But, for example, I didn't tell her I was doing this today because I didn't think that she would, one, think it was anything, or two, be proud of me, maybe. I mean, I didn't think that she would acknowledge it as something other than I wasn't helping her take my grandmother to get an infusion today. So it was more of, you know, I'm just not going to tell her to save me the shit that I would get for not helping her.
For not doing what she wanted you.
Yes.
And what she needs you to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she still is one of those that...
So there are people that still, that you still...
One. Okay. Just her.
Okay. You know, it's interesting. My dog gets very excited and starts running around. It's interesting when you start loving yourself. At what point do you think you started to love yourself?
It's a battle.
Yeah. Well,
every day.
Yep. And I understand that. But when you're conscious that you do love yourself.
I think I know it's when I stop judging everybody else. And when I stop criticizing everybody else, and when I stop comparing myself to everybody else.
And the interesting thing is I, for all the conversations that we've had, I don't really remember or recall you criticizing other people.
I did in my head. And then I was like, no, like, you can't do that. You don't know them.
Right,
you know?
It's perspective. Yeah. It's just like me saying, or somebody else saying to you, you're on the phone and we're talking, and me just automatically assuming because your voice inflections aren't changing that there's something wrong, mm-hmm. that you're depressed, that you're not happy, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm talking with somebody who is different than me, whose perspective in life is different than me, whose all of your experiences are different than my experiences. Right. And so in the same ways, so your experiences are different than my experiences. So as we're talking on the phone, and this goes with any interactions and any conversations with any other humans on this planet, I don't care. Well, you know, you may be listening to us talk and you're like, what's the point in this? Well, the point is this, in this whole conversation, if you look at it, you've got so many things that we've looked at here. We've looked at addiction. We've looked at alcohol addiction. We've looked at suicide. We've looked at saying goodbye and grief. We've looked at dealing with all that. And I'm not even going to get into, you know, because we don't have any time now, the things that caused the emotional, you know, issues from the very beginning and the onset of that, mm-hmm. and how you worked your way through those. I think at some point we will, you know, we'll revisit this and go back to that. But here, this human being made a decision, a conscious decision, to just have a leap of faith and go do what they wanted to do in life and believe that it was going to happen. And it did happen. You got a place to live where you've always wanted to live. You got a really great job. Eventually, everything. And it was a short period of time. Mm-hmm. And I do remember us talking about that it would be difficult, but it would be a short period of time. Mm-hmm. But you also went through a huge process that woke you up to what is important for you to be healthy within yourself. I mean, it's just like one slap in the face on another, but you didn't retreat. You didn't, when that happened, you didn't run home. You didn't run home with your tail between your legs. You didn't go, I give up. You said, okay, I see what's happening here. And I made some good decisions and I still have a lot of work to do. I'm going to keep going. And that's the point. When you are recovering from trauma, when you are learning these things, it is a one day at a time process. I mean, that may sound like, you know, some cliche from a 12-step program, but grief is a day at a time. And there's going to be days where you feel amazing, and there's going to be days where you feel that kick in your solar plexus. And I always get I always get emotional because I'm an emotional person, and so I feel that, you know, I know that I'll be happy and alive and enjoying it, and I know that solar plexus kick is going to come, and it's going to make me aware of something, right? Mm-hmm. Something that I need to work on, something that I wasn't aware of, something that I need to be appreciative, something I need to be grateful for. And we need to learn that those highs are wonderful, but those kicks that bring us back like a rubber band happen because we also need to learn to be grateful for everything that we start taking for granted. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep. And it's all about reaction. How we choose to react to things that happen. I mean, I knew it was life or death. If I stayed here, I wasn't going to make it. So what did I have to lose? Nothing.
And then you had it right in front, you had it literally right in front of your eyes, life mm-hmm. and death, just that quick.
Yeah. And it's still that way. I mean, I've lost my dad recently, one of them, and a couple other people. And I mean, it's just something that will continue, obviously.
It was your stepdad you lost, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And he's the one that you had a really good relationship with.
He was a healthy influence. He brought my mom and I closer in the beginning when I met him when I was 8. And he brought us back together when he left. And
it's a big deal.
Yeah. And things like this, you have to... I mean, you can do whatever you want, but... I mean, it's good to just accept that shit is going to happen.
Right. And it doesn't... It does not mean that it's bad. It's just like you saw me. You could see me feel that, right? But it's like this interesting, joyful... I mean, how would you explain it? Because I'm not like feeling devastated. I have this overwhelming sense of joy, but my eyes fill with tears, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I understand that
if you've been through it.
Feeling is amazing.
It.
Yeah. And at feeling, we shouldn't run from feeling. And typically, when we get involved with drugs or drinking too much or any of those kinds of things,
it just pushes it down.
Right. We're running from feeling. So when you learn to feel and you learn to feel your way through things, even the difficult feelings, you understand that even the difficult feelings are so important that when you look at them, you don't try to run away from them any longer.
Eventually, you're going to deal with them.
Or
you just need to decide if you want to deal with all of that shit together or one at a time. I just choose one at a time now.
Right.
It's a lot easier.
As it comes at you, instead of hiding it and then having it.
I just happen to sound like a talking text message conversation. You don't know how I'm feeling because I don't show it. I just...
But it doesn't mean that you're not feeling it.
Right. I just am what I am.
I am's what I am's.
Yeah. And I'm okay with that.
And that's good.
Can't change anybody else.
And those are huge lessons to learn.
It's on them if they don't want to see past how I sound.
Right. But you don't take it personally anymore when people...
No.
Say, Mandy, what's wrong with you?
I'm happy on the inside. It's not my fault you can't see it.
That's great. Okay, you guys. I'm hoping that you took something away in this because... It is extremely important to learn how to process your feelings and not shove them down and hide them and cover them and mask them with alcohol. If there's anything that you want to say at the very end, what would it be? We've got 1 minute.
Be authentic. That's all I've learned the most. Not all I've learned, but it's one of my favorite lessons.
Just be you.
Authentic. It's all I can do. That's all I say.
That's awesome. Okay, you guys. Well, I thank you for listening. And tune in next week when we talk about... I do an interview with an ER mental health worker who's been in the ER for 37 years and has been dealing with this COVID thing and has a lot to say about it. Anyway, have a great week. Rain out. Rain here. I want you to know that you can find the podcast. It's called Get On Board. Originally, it was Get On Board with Rain and Rachel, but it's Get On Board with Rain, basically re-engineering your life to be what you want it to be. And you can find it on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Anchor, Breaker, Spotify, Pocket Casts, and hopefully a few more really soon. You can also find me on Facebook. I have a personal Facebook, which is Nick Finelove. I am revamping the Facebook that has to do with this, but you can find my podcast information on Life Revealed. You can also find podcast information on Instagram at GetOnBoard333, which is where I started originally with Rachel, but now this format has changed since Rachel has gone, she's gotten engaged and she's gone on to do other things, which is great. But I want to continue this work because it's so important. You can also find my personal Instagram at Life Revealed or Rain Finelove. And the YouTube channel has not been updated yet, but it is Get On Board. And I will be putting out roughly 3 videos a week here pretty soon. And you can also find it on Life Revealed on YouTube. So I can't wait for you to come and listen or read in any way, shape, you know, in any format possible. Because the whole point is to create a life you love, one that's satisfying, one that you think is amazing, and find happiness. And you can do it. I've done it. Take care.